Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. We are going back to our series, Deliberate Practice, and joining me is the co-host for our series, Andy Ryland. Andy, it's great to be back here on Deliberate Practice.
Yeah. Awesome to be back, Keith. Obviously loved what we did there during the season, and great to be able to touch base here now in the off season and offer some more ideas on really digging down into how we make practice the best it can be and being deliberate about what we do.
Exactly. And today we're going to focus on the idea of know your why. It's something I see on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, not just in football, but in, you know, anything in personal development. Everybody always says, know your why, that you have to know why you do things. You have to know what's at the core of what drives you as a person, as a professional, etc. And as coaches, I think we need to focus on know your why, especially in terms of not just scheme, but techniques, specifically how we develop skills and how we use drills and practice time.
Yeah, I think to your point, with the rise in kind of the conversations on culture, most of our coaches now are doing some great work on knowing why they coach, why they work with young men, young women, what their why is for serving in that position. But taking it the next step and playing that game with what we do as a program and on the practice field can really have huge benefits to the drills, techniques, and schemes that you start working with.
What I see overall is, we've talked about this before, is kind of a copy and paste mentality. We are in an information age. It is so easy right now to go somewhere, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, and pick up a drill, right? It's easy to do that. I read in an article, and we're going to get into it a little bit the other day, where it's called Fortnite is Not Sports Enemy, Outdated Coaching Is, and they were telling a little story about an old coach, and the idea was he's got more drills than a hardware store. I thought that was pretty funny, but I think that's what we've seen is there are a lot of coaches out there, and we, I think, have all fallen into this trap where we go out and we collect drills. They look really cool. Maybe there's a team, we've talked about this before, with a very recognizable logo on their helmet doing these drills, and we fall into the trap of trying to apply that to our guys and thinking that that's what's going to make our team better.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. The information age, we can be drill collectors. And if, you were to question yourself deeply, I think we'd all say the best coaches are the ones who are able to sort through that material and isolate what works best for their age group or their system, their scheme, whatever it might be. So there's guys that we know and respect who have hard drives full of everyone's stuff. But when you look at their practice, it's a much slimmed down slice of the pie that works. And I think the question why is the reason or how we get there. I forget exactly where I first heard it, but somewhere between, college and my coaching career and even till now for the past 20 years, I was always run by, ask yourself why five times. And if you can't dig down to the bottom of it, you're really in trouble. And then I know Fergus Conley has written and talked about this recently. And at National Conference, I had a great conversation with our good friend Dan Casey. And he said at the end of each season when he's doing his program audit, he only gives it three whys. But if it can't stand the rigor of three whys, getting deep on it, then it's out of the program and something else is in. And I think it can be a really useful exercise when you start to look at what drills am I using. And then another great example that came up earlier this week was the detail of our technique. And is the why actually there, or is it just coachisms holding true throughout time?
I think the biggest thing, Andy, as we go out and collect some of these ideas, drills, schemes even, is we don't make those connections. We don't test it enough, like you said, like Coach Casey asking why three times and really digging down to, you know, all this information we've pulled in, all these ideas, all these drills, all these schemes, and figuring out what fits best. And I like to think of drills, and when I look at putting together practices, I kind of start with the end in mind and essentially reverse engineer that. So if this is what's happening a lot in a particular play, or here's the few things that are going to happen, and I think if you look at, as I've said before on Deliberate Practice podcasts, if you look at any single play, scheme, situation, there's going to be a limited amount of things that happen again and again and again. Those are the things that become your drills, and as we've mentioned, you don't leave them in sterile situations as your kids learn them, and as the season goes on, as they become proficient at each of the individual decisions, you start building in the VDA cycle where they're, you know, using their vision to make the decision and take action, that it becomes a decision-making drill as well. And I see a lot of drills that fall short of that, that they don't build in the decision-making portion, because ultimately you have to decide on, you know, what's going to happen and make decisions on the run. I pointed out to you the last time I was in the office a drill that I saw at Notre Dame College that they picked up from Georgia. They didn't learn it directly. They saw it being run. They kind of reversed engineer it with the end in mind, and what they were trying to get out of it was that they wanted a drill where you were in a chaotic situation, that the blocker had to make a decision on who was most dangerous, that guy, as he was being blocked, had to make a decision on how he was going to fit, and then the other defender in the drill, who was not the most dangerous, had to decide how he was fitting into that block that was occurring in front of him so that he can defend the ball carrier. And, of course, the ball carrier then had all kinds of decisions to make with what he was going to do on the play. And we have that one. I'll link it. It's in our blog. We had it up last week. I'll also link the podcast with Coach Jacobs from Notre Dame College where we talked about that. But I think, you know, as an example, I think that kind of drill is great. But if I just saw it on the internet or Twitter or whatever, I don't know if I would have picked up all those details that those guys in the thought process, those guys had put into it.
No, that's the key point there. To me, it's the details, and asking yourself why gets you to those details, where you could easily do that drill as a high effort competitive, you know, I think everyone knows my feelings on our overuse of the word toughness and not understanding its real definition, but you could use that drill in that scenario, but that's not what it was designed for. So if you don't know the whys behind it and what we're trying to get out of it and why each player has to make these decisions and why that helps them on game day and why we want to work in chaotic situations, you have a great drill setup that just becomes a sterile collision drill instead of layering in that detail. And so it's a great point. I love that drill, a great article as well. But sometimes you need the article to support the drill in order to get what's really meant by it. So I'll give another example here. Our good friend Terry Summerfield, who's been very active on social media.
You know, that's he's a coach, surprise, right?
Yeah, he's for those that don't know, it's taken him a while to get to social media. Now he's absolutely doing a great job with it. But you know, he's the kind of guy who he lets coaches from his own conference come to his practice. So when they were in the state playoffs, he let coaches that he was going to compete against next year come to their practices because they were their season had been done. So he's a huge sharer. So he's putting out all these great drills. But Terry was one of the guys who was in our pilot. So he's a year ahead of everybody when it comes to advanced tackle systems. He's really doing some pretty in-depth VDA type drills, in my opinion. I think they're fantastic. But the danger, right, of posting them is if you don't understand the detail of what we're doing, you know, you'll lose the technique in the drill. So he posted one where a player was taking on a block. He had to release the block, and they were assuming that it was a RPO or a play had bounced. Now he has to pursue in the alley, navigate around a second blocker, we're assuming some slot receiver just hanging out there, and then make a decision based on coach's information do I have the angle? Can I make a leverage tackle and try to drive it? Or do I, am I in a chase situation and I'm going to have to roll it? Well, that's obviously a lot of stuff in that drill. So the first thing that's going to go is the detail within the tackle. If we're trying to do all those things and set up this high energy VDA aspect, the problem is we could let our players start to get away with poor technique in the tackle. We lose our clamp. We're not accurate with our shoulder. We're not keeping our cleats in the ground. So again, if we don't know why Coach Summerfield is doing that drill, what he's trying to replicate and why he's trying to challenge his players, the drill might just be over your players' heads, or it's just going to be a high effort, you know, hogwash. And sometimes we let ourselves get away with that because the aggression is up, right? The guys are really working. We're flying all over. And it's just that little bit of depth, I think, that we can all do, all look at. And, you know, it's a great off-season exercise. Go through some of your drills, some of your periods, some of the things that you have been doing. I say especially the ones we've been doing for a really long time, and make sure they still hold up to the rigor. You know, why are we doing this drill? What are we getting out of it? Why is this a good way to teach the, you know, our offensive linemen this thing? Why does this help them? And if you can't really get them up with a good answer, then it's a great chance for you to go and create something better or look for something better, as long as we're asking those deep questions.
I totally agree, Andy. And one of the things you mentioned there, you talked about within that drill, we do have some high-energy drills. The drill, I pointed out, Notre Dame College just calls it the Georgia drill because that's where they got it. You know, that drill, very competitive for the guys. In fact, one of the things I saw all spring long is that anytime there were these types of competition drills, the coaches actually had a plan for who was going against who. Every single guy had it scripted out that in this particular drill, in this set, these are the guys who are involved. And I saw a lot of, you know, Buffalo did it, Ohio State did it, Notre Dame College did it, where those things were scripted out as well. So they had the right matchups, they had the right guys going in there. And then the other thing I saw is when that drill ended, all those guys got coached up on what they did right, what they needed to improve. You know, I mentioned in the article talking about how, you know, the blocking fits, all the different things with the tackling fits, that it wasn't just a blind, like you said, one of those toughness drills. We're competing, so let's go out and be tough and forget technique. That within that drill, they were still coaching up technique. And I think it's one of those things. I had a conversation with somebody on Twitter a long time ago about that aspect of, you know, toughness. And, I mean, we're in a day and age, if you think that's the only thing your drill is getting out of it, it's toughness, and you're not coaching things up, and technique is thrown to the side. Certainly when you throw technique to the side, you know, it's probably not as safe of a drill, because I think this game demands good technique. Superior technique, I think, is a part of safety. So you have to coach that up. And if you're saying, well, we just run that drill to get our juices going, and we run that drill for toughness, you know, someday in a serious situation, you may be called out for that, sitting in front of people who, you know, goes beyond just your job on the line, but, you know, with lawyers as they like to get into this. That's not a good answer for why you run a drill. You better dig deeper than that. You better have a reason, and there better be a direct application to what happens on game day, because if there's not, and you're not teaching those skills, it's probably not a drill you should be running.
I think you hit two nails on the head right there. When we talk about asking yourself the three or the five whys, and does this drill hold up? If you can't answer the why of the technique, or the proper technique that you're trying to develop, and is that technique being developed in a good way that's going to help transfer to the game field, right? It's probably not the best drill. So if I can't answer the technique why or the application why, then, you know, again, it's probably a good one for the trash bin. And the other thing that I like to think about is, you know, every coach complains about time. Right. So if time is our enemy, and we're going to waste 5 or 10 minutes for a drill that's only answering energy, it's probably one for the trash bin as well. Right. We have to make sure we're getting a lot out of all of those whys. And, you know, at the youth level, obviously, I've seen things where, you know, with the access we have NFL Network, Longhorn Network, Big Ten Network. There's so many behind-the-scenes shows. You know, I've seen some volunteer coaches obviously doing their best. We love what they do for the game. We wouldn't have it without them. But without some of the knowledge base or without really asking why, they're doing drills that aren't even for the right scheme. You know, a three-deep team is doing two-deep corner drills where they're really working hard on the reroute in that short area. And I'm thinking, man, we probably just saw this on TV. And I think the higher up we go, it's not limited to those younger guys. We just get a little brainwashed by the logo sometimes, and the drill might not fit our scheme, might not fit our technique. And, you know, being bold about things like we've been on this podcast, sometimes the drills just aren't actually very good. They're just based in tradition. And I forget where I heard it, but I tweeted it the other day. But, you know, tradition can be the enemy kind of progress and creativity. And so sometimes we have to work through those difficult situations. And I think it's a great off-season exercise for the coaching staff to get together and look at how are we developing our, say, our screen block, right? How are we developing that? What are our drills? Why? Why does that work? Why do we like that? Why does that carry over the technique? And if we can't answer those questions, let's go ahead and get creative and try to find the best drills we can to teach those things. And I think sometimes the clinic circuit and the drill collection can be the enemy of that, because we search for the answer there instead of being able to answer our team's whys and find the best drill for us, our situation, and what we do.
Absolutely. And, you know, extending that thought and getting into this article, you know, I know we're at a time here. I've seen the emails coming out in my community signing up for youth football, and a lot of these are attached to things that are coming from our head football coach here at the high school. So he's heavily involved in our youth programs, and I know that's the case in a lot of programs around the country. This article, I think, applies especially to the youth level in what we're trying to develop there, but I think we can take this and really apply it to what we're doing as well, because I think we, like you said, get caught up in the tradition of things. We get caught up in, well, this team over here does it and they have success, and again, all this goes back to the why. But the title of the article was Fortnite is Not Sports Enemy, Outdated Coaching Is. And one of the main people talked about here is a world-leading coach educator. His name's Wayne Goldsmith, and works with rugby. He's worked with Olympic swim team. He's worked with Michael Phelps and Lochte. He's worked all over sport, really. And his point he's trying to make here initially is that some of the things we do not meet our players, do not meet our athletes at what they're looking for. In other words, we don't really understand their why and what they want and what they need. And a lot of times, especially as we look at the volunteer coach, and you mentioned that, primarily our youth programs, even into some of our middle school programs, are built around volunteer coaches who come out and do what they know based on their experiences. So, you know, he brings up this example of an old guy, Jack, who has been helping out at a rugby club for 30 years and very knowledgeable about the game, has been involved, actually has all the right intentions, and goes out to the field. The kids are meeting them, they're excited to play rugby. He says, all right, go run four laps. Again, the point being, like, that's what, you know, he knows. And they get back and they do some drills that maybe aren't quite as fun. And you know, the point I made earlier in here, I thought it was a funny quote: this guy's got more drills than a hardware store. But the idea that the experience we're giving kids is out of touch with what they want. There's a reason they're playing Fortnite. They don't practice Fortnite, they go play Fortnite. And at these younger ages, we have to be looking at how do we develop the skills in a way that meets these kids where they are, that we understand they're coming to us because they want to have fun. This looks fun. We can still build in all those things that we want to, as part of our program, all those life lessons, the being tough, the, you know, doing things a specific way, but we can't always start with training those guys exactly the same way as they would in the NFL or they would at the high school level.
I mean, I think the double down on the point you made, because you said it so perfectly, are we meeting their expectations? And that's a great way to look at it. Are we meeting the players' wise? And obviously it gets a little bit different from youth to the high school. And, you know, now maybe we're talking scholarships and state championships. So it is a bit of a performance level. But are we meeting their why? For the kids who want to play football, I always just come back to play football. You know, we want to make it fun. We want to make it engaging. You know, the three L's, no lines, no laps, no lectures. You know, can we keep it moving? Can we keep it engaging? And, you know, I've been a proponent of games that are very non-traditional football-esque. Ultimate football is a game that I love to play with young kids, because you'll never get as many passes and catches in a competitive situation and some contested catches and decision-making of who's open, if you will, when you play ultimate football. Now, somebody will say, well, they're not taking the right drop. They're not doing this. They're, you know, well, as far as pocket awareness, he's standing there. He's not allowed to take any steps. There's defenders and offensive players running all over. He's got to find it, read it, and there's all these throws and catches. I mean, that's a great game, and that's a those are transferable skills depending on the age group you're working on, passing and catching. You know, are any variations of tag-based games, sharks and minnows or team-based tags, you know, I look at it as that's evasive running for our offensive players, and that's tracking the ball carrier for our defensive players. They don't need to know that they're tracking with leverage from an inside-out position because they're safety support. At our youngest levels, they just need to work on those general physical qualities of tracking and evasive running. And so there's a lot of creative ways to start building that in and make it a fun experience. We all know the biggest challenge of football when it comes to making it fun at the youth level is kind of the structure of the game, very short plays, and then we go back to the huddle. And that can make practices like that. But when we're standing in a lot of lines and getting lectured about what to do, there's definitely kids that are going to say, this isn't what I signed up for. And they're going to say, I enjoyed basketball more or lacrosse more because I just got to go run around. So if I can teach some of these techniques, so instead of doing an inside-out leverage drill like I would with maybe a performance-based athlete that understands conceptually how it fits into the system, maybe we are just playing a tag-based game because I'm meeting him where he is. I'm meeting and fulfilling his why. And then when I get to the older level, if that why is to be the best, maybe I can kind of be a little more conceptual and build in some very specifics to a high-level technique. But generally speaking, I think, as you said, we have to be able to answer their why if we want to get the best possible buy-in.
And I'd like to make the point, you and I have talked about this a lot, you're not saying go out and just play these small-sided games or go play a Sharks and Minnow game or go play ultimate football during the entire football practice. You're saying
no.
Play those in because as I see this, let's say we started with, you know, as a warm-up instead of getting in lines and doing calisthenics and running all these dynamic warm-ups. I mean, our kids at the youngest ages are very flexible. They're you know, they have aerobic capacity. We don't necessarily need to take them through that same kind of activation period like we would the older guys or, you know, the hip mobility things. I mean, they still got it. They haven't reached that point where even injuries occur. In fact, you know, looking at the baseball team I coached growing up, we didn't see those till around 13, 14, where the muscle injuries started to play an issue and guys started missing games like the older kids do. The younger kids, take them out, play ultimate football or Sharks and Minnows, and then find coachable or teachable moments. If it's a big one, stop it right there. Show what happened. Maybe the guy had the ability to use, you know, the area. Let's say you had him in a box and you were playing some sort of tag game where he could have used the sideline to an advantage. That wow, that's right there. I'm going to stop it, and I'm going to show him what he could have done, and I'm going to tell the kids, you know, the rest of this this period as we're playing this, I want you to focus on using that sideline as a defender with you. And now it starts to layer in some of that instruction. And some of it could be just the narrative you're creating. Maybe you want after that to work, like you said, a period where you're playing ultimate football. You want to work on some coverage things. And you find an error or two like that you could point out. You remember, hey, Joey on this play, do you remember when Joey did this? Here's how he could have been better. Now we're going to line up and do this drill. And please don't put him in lines to do this. Make him work with a partner or make him work in small groups to work on those types of things. That's where I think you get a lot of leverage into what the player wants, that especially that young player when they're out there. They want to have fun.
No, and yeah, great point. One, we don't have to do it for the whole, 60 or 90 minutes. And obviously there's going to be more teaching, say, when we're doing some play work, maybe we're installing a new play. As much as I love small-sided games and I'm a huge proponent of it, I'm also very upfront about, the way we teach the contact skills is going to be much different because of the safety mechanisms involved. So we're going to slow things down and do some teaching there. But I think what you just outlined is really just high-quality coaching to a T, right? I play the game, I identify some key points, I use some learning objectives, and that's where it can, blow the whistle. Hey, guys, 30 seconds. Let's talk about 1, 2, 3, boom, boom, boom. Here we go. Let's play again for the rest. I love that quote. For the rest of the game, let's really try to do that. That simple cue can be maybe all that's needed instead of the three-minute lecture. And it really fits into the whole park, whole structure, right, where we play the game. Maybe we identify some coverage things. We talk about some coverage things. Maybe we identify some leverage things to the sideline. Maybe we do some isolated drill work, and then we go back into the game. And that's just, classic whole part whole, in my opinion, and it works incredibly well. It's a great strategy. And, again, it just speaks to kind of your coaching acumen to be able to pick it up that quickly. But it's a tool we can all use. And the other thing, we've talked about is it's okay for athletes to fail in practice. That's the safe space where they're allowed to fail because failing is part of the learning process. So, we don't have to coach up every rep. To your point, maybe you see two or three things and then you stop it and try to, give some information that may help them correct it. But when you first give them that information and that feedback, or when you first do a drill, we all know that the first couple reps aren't always going to be pretty. The athlete is kind of sorting it out and learning in their own head. And that's very powerful if we can actually have the discipline to be quiet and let them sort it out, let them have two or three reps to try to figure out, how do I take coach's teaching and put it into action with my own body? And maybe they need some more cueing later on, but maybe they sort it out by themselves on the third rep. And I think that gives athletes ownership and mastery that becomes really fulfilling for them because they're solving some problems. And that's where the coach is being the guide, not the dictator. And that can be so powerful in answering youngsters' why. Because, all jokes aside about this generation or that generation, I do think that kids want to be involved in the process. They're not always looking for just to be told everything. They want to be part of discovering the solutions, bettering themselves, and finding a way forward.
Andy, I think one of the biggest things and best things we're doing right now at USA Football is what we launched at our national conference, the football development model, which is based on U.S. Olympic Committee's American development model. And it's a long-term athlete development model. It interweaves skill and technique and really technical, tactical development at each level, physical development, physical literacy, all the way through. I've had a number of coaches come on and just talk about the different types of game types that they use. I think Mike Elder in Avon here, right near me in Ohio, does an incredible job on setting up his program for success in the way that they move from flag to padded flag to rookie tackle to the 11-man game. And the results for him bear out on Friday nights where he's got one of the best teams in the state. And he's looked at it, though, holistically, and what do we need at each level? What do we want to develop? And essentially, that's what the football development model is, and we're going to continue to build that out, and you're going to see more and more on it. Coaches, I encourage you to go to usafootball.com/FDM. to get more information. I'll put that in the show notes. But Andy, talk a little bit about the importance of looking at the game right now, especially, you know, we've been talking to our coaches about their youth programs and some things they can do there, but having this model in place to help them develop their programs all the way up.
Well, I think it goes back to being asked yourself the why questions. You know, if we were to look at, say, we're gonna start a youngster's first football experience, 11 on 11, 100 by 53 and a third yards, and you go, well, why should an 8, 10, 12-year-old, whatever, why should he be playing on the same size field as an NFL player? Well, you know, then you start coming up with the answers, and if your answer is because it's football, you're ignoring all the social, the cognitive, the physical development aspects. And I think we'd go, hey, that doesn't really hold up to the rigor. I'm a huge fan of what Coach Elder is doing. So saying, hey, we're going to play flag. Well, why flag? You know, I know there's some folks that are anti-flag. Well, we think that the passing and the catching are transferable skills. We think that tracking and evasive running are transferable skills. So we can have kids in a fast, fun, paced environment where they're getting to score touchdowns, but they're learning some transferable skills, and they're just getting used to the idea of football. Hey, that fits our needs. That's great. We're going to move to padded flag. Well, that's not as common, right, as in a lot of areas. And so, well, why are we going to use padded flag? Well, we can introduce blocking before we introduce tackling so that our players can get a full year of just working on block and block defeat techniques. That allows our coaches to really focus on some specific techniques. Our players grow and develop those skills. We've slowed how much they have to learn at each step of their journey. Instead of going from flag to full field tackle and having to learn all the techniques, now all of a sudden we're really getting some great focused learning. It's just like building a school curriculum. And so I think that asking ourselves why does it fit, and really looking at the depth of the answers becomes incredibly important. And the football development models we created, working with experts in sports, in medicine, in child development, in physical education, and actual real football coaches, to get a group consensus of, let's create a framework that can help coaches and help leagues and commissioners and people all across the country answer some of these whys on, hey, why is it important to focus on these things at this area? Why are these the best choices for kids of this age? You know, what sort of character building items should we be addressing with our youth kids? You know, we would think that in elementary school, I always use the example that, you know, say there's a tragedy that happens somewhere in the world. You're going to explain it to the 8-year-olds much different than you would the 16-year-olds within your school district. The conversations about, you know, what's happened at an earthquake or a shooting or any of these things, we have very different conversations based on the maturity and cognitive levels. So if we look at life skills that we say football teaches, it's probably not going to work to take our high school curriculum for player development and good character and use it with our youngest age groups. So just some simple guidelines that help us address the right things at the right stages can really add a benefit to your program. And going back to, we hope to answer the whys of why this game is important, why these physical skills are important, you know, why we play more games at the younger levels, why we use our dynamic warm-up as a coordination development period as opposed to a flexibility and activation period because of the different groups we have. And I think that can just be an incredibly powerful tool for coaches to help them go through these off-season programs, filter their systems, audit their systems, and find the best way forward.
Absolutely. Well, there's a lot of links in this podcast, and we'll share those in our show notes. We mentioned a lot here. Andy, continue to do the great work you do. It sounds like people are getting ready for a meeting there in Indianapolis in the background. Not sure what's going on. But, Andy, I appreciate you taking the time today, and you and I will continue some updates on our deliberate practice series here throughout the spring and into the summer, getting ready to prepare for the 2019 season. I encourage our listeners to go back and listen to all the deliberate practice podcasts. I think Andy and I have done 14 or 15 of those. I'll share our playlist for that in the show notes as well. We've mentioned our advanced tackling system, our contact system, as well as our free shoulder tackling system. Those are available at footballdevelopment.com. Follow us on Twitter. Andy is at USAFootballMT. I'm at Coach K. Grabowski, and we have our new Twitter for football coaches at FBDEVCoach. Check all those out. If you have any questions you would like answered, Andy would answer them readily. Is always on the phone with coaches, can help you out in getting the FDM started or looking at some different things in your program. DM him on Twitter. Again, that's at USAFootballMT. Andy, it was great as usual, and I look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Appreciate the opportunity to talk to the audience, the coaches out there. Hopefully something is useful. Every coach says, you know, if they steal one thing out of a clinic, it was worth it. So hopefully you got one thing out of the last 45 minutes on your drive home. But good luck this offseason for those in spring ball. Hope we take some of this information to heart, run some great edits. And again, we'll be back on the next Deliver podcast and look forward to talking with everyone.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.